This is Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the White House asserts executive privilege on the special counsel's report.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Stan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. Stan Bennett with you. Glad to be back here with you after a few days away. Going to be joined by other members of the team here shortly. Jay and Jordan will be back with us soon. But folks, meanwhile, there is a lot going on in Washington, D.C. today and around the world. We're going to get to a number of those topics today. We're going to focus in primarily on three of them. A little bit later in the broadcast, we're going to hear a big announcement, a victory out of Pakistan, this case that many of you have been following along with us. Asiya Bibi, the mother who was convicted and on death row for being a Christian. She was convicted of blasphemy under the penal code of Pakistan. Reports are today that she is safely free and in Canada. We will have Shahryar Gill from our Pakistan office on later in the broadcast to talk about that victory. We're also going to talk about breaking news out of Iran and the Persian Gulf region. We heard earlier this week about provocations of Iran threatening U.S. interest in the region. Now, how did we know that Iran was threatening the United States and our interest in the region? We knew of it because of our strong ally in the region, Israel, shared with us intelligence, and National Security Advisor John Bolton dispatched the aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln, to the region to be prepared to respond to those provocations. So we'll talk about that with some of our military experts as well. But we're going to start with this breaking news here in Washington, D.C., that many of you have probably seen, that the White House has now asserted executive privilege over the release of the special counsel's report. Now, I want to bring Andy Economo, senior counsel for the ACLJ and former U.S. attorney, into this conversation right off the top of the bat here, and we will get into more details after the break. But Andy, as I look at this situation as it unfolds, I see an administration that has been extremely transparent, one that has responded to the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, really above and beyond what it needed to. In the next segment of the broadcast, we can talk about the report that was released almost fully unredacted. There were four categories of redactions that we can walk through, but there was this great infograph, Andy, that I think the New York Times had, where it put all of the pages of the report onto one infographic, and it showed the redactions, and almost nothing was redacted, and virtually all of that was what we know as 6E material, grand jury information that you keep secret in a grand jury for obvious reasons, which you can explain. But now that did not satisfy the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He has continued to push for a fully unredacted report, and now the White House, Andy, has issued executive privilege over that report. I think this is something that the chairman will come to regret, but what's your read on it as of today?
Well, I think it's a blatantly political move on the part of Nadler and the Democrats on the committee. Look, I read this report, and the only thing that's been redacted is things that dealing with sources and methods and things that deal with material that was obtained through a grand jury subpoena. Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure say that what you get from grand jury subpoenas is not disclosable. It's secret. And that information was redacted by the Attorney General. And furthermore, the information that was redacted was information relating to the transfer or the referral of cases, probably cases of false statement, to various U.S. attorneys. So they got the whole report, 99.9% of the report. And the reality, Than, is that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice didn't even have to disclose that. And yet they did, and the Democrats are under Nadler in the House are still complaining that they haven't gotten enough. That's not true. They've gotten plenty. They've gotten more than they were entitled to under the law, and I think much more than they deserve.
And we'll get into it after the break, but the White House had offered even more of that information to select members of Congress. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee denied that offer. Folks, we want to hear from you on all three of these topics. If you want to call in and be a part of the broadcast, the number is 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. After the break, we'll get into this executive privilege assertion a little bit more. We'll give you the details, and then we'll move into the other topics. Again, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. As I speak to you, the House Judiciary Committee is holding a hearing, voting to hold the Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, in contempt of Congress. It all comes back to this negotiation that was taking place over what version of the special counsel's report Congress would be given. Now, I think many of you have probably seen the full report that was released with very minimal redactions. There were four categories of redactions in that report that was available for all of us to read. No matter who you are, you don't have to be a member of Congress to read this report. Very few redactions. The first category that was not revealed, there were minimal redactions, but the first category was related to grand jury information. You heard Andy talk about it in the last segment of the broadcast. It's Rule 6E of the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure. It protects information that is supposed to be secret. It would be illegal to disseminate. The second is sources and methods, to make sure that sources and methods that are used by investigators to investigate crimes are protected and it doesn't compromise investigations. And the third is connected to that, is information related to ongoing investigations to make sure that it doesn't undermine those investigations. And the final is really core to a fundamental portion of our rule of law here in America. It is to protect the privacy of third parties, those who are innocent, those who might be in this report but not charged with the crime. We protect the innocent in this country. So very reasonable redactions. This dispute, though, between the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and the White House, or really the Department of Justice, was over whether or not they could access a less redacted form of that report. Jerry Nadler had been offered a very minimally redacted, essentially all the redactions removed except for that grand jury information, to be available to 12 members of Congress, and he rejected that. So I want to go back to Andy Economo, senior counsel for the ACLJ and former U.S. attorney. Andy, the release of 6E material, grand jury material, to me, that is a non-starter. And I'm gonna read a statement from the White House press secretary in a minute, and it's clear that they view it the same way. But when the chairman of the Judiciary Committee insisted that he be given access to grand jury information that has to remain private, I think that was a line at which the White House really had no choice but to assert this executive privilege.
Than, that's absolutely correct. To release information that is protected under Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure is a criminal offense. Grand jury proceedings are secret. They are not conducted in the public eye. They are intended to determine whether or not there is probable cause to believe a crime has been committed. when Attorney General Barr and members of the Justice Department went over the Mueller report to determine whether there was information in there that was obtained through grand jury subpoena, they redacted, that is, took out that information so that it would not be exposed to the public. And they did it for a reason, and that is simply that that's what the law requires. Now, Nadler and the Democrats don't like that. Well, I'm sorry. Amend the federal rules of criminal procedure and get the Supreme Court, well, which has supervisory authority over federal courts, to change them. But you can't do it otherwise. And they need to back off on that, which they're obviously not going to do, because this is simply political posturing that has no basis in the law, Than.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Andy. I don't even think this is about access to the information at all, because if it was, I think, first of all, I think the version of the report that we have would have satisfied them if they were looking for what the special counsel found. That was very apparent to me as I read the report. But secondly, Andy, I think this new offer that would have withheld only the grand jury information, I think that clearly would have satisfied them. I agree with you. This is about political posturing. It is about attacking the president, the administration, and trying to gain another narrative now that the collusion narrative and the obstruction of justice narrative has been dispelled. I think that is what it is about. I want to talk to Harry for just a moment about this executive privilege assertion. But first of all, I want to read the statement from the press secretary, the White House press secretary, about this, just a portion of the statement. She said the attorney general has been transparent and accommodating throughout this process, including by releasing the no collusion, no conspiracy, no obstruction Mueller report to the public and offering to testify before the committee. These attempts to work with the committee have been flatly rejected. They didn't like the results of the report, and now they want a redo. Faced with Chairman Nadler's blatant abuse of power and at the Attorney General's request, the president has no other option than to make a protective assertion of executive privilege. First of all, I agree with the statement. I think the Attorney General really bent over backwards to try to provide the Congress with information that was above and beyond what was required by law. I think he thought it was in the interest of the American people to see what the special counsel had turned up. The release that they made definitely does that. But I want to go to Professor Harry Hutchison, senior counsel with the ACLJ and our director of policy. Harry, the White House has now been forced, essentially. I use the word forced because I think the only other option was to release grand jury information, which I think is a non-starter for them, has been forced to assert executive privilege to protect this information, to keep it from being released. How is that process going to work? What is that going to look like going forward as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee gets that assertion? I expect he will challenge it. What will that look like going forward?
Well, first, I think the chairman will certainly have his day in the House. In other words, the House will indeed vote to hold Attorney General Barr in contempt. The White House will continue, as they should, to insist upon executive privilege. It will then wind up in court. More likely than not, this will take years of litigation to resolve, but at the end of the day, the White House should prevail, in part for reasons that Andy has already discussed in terms of 6E material, which is illegal to release. But I think the bottom line has very little to do with this whole contempt vote and the White House's assertion of executive privilege. It is all about one thing and one thing only: kabuki theater on the part of the Democrats. Because at the end of the day, even if Attorney General Barr released the entire unredacted report in violation of the law, that would not be enough to satisfy the Democrats. They then would demand access to all of the underlying documents, which, as I understand it, includes millions of documents. And they want those documents in part because they want to embarrass this particular administration. In addition, of course, we have evidence that is clear and unmistakable that they do not have, that is Congress, they don't have any real interest in reading the report. Instead, they want the media to do the job. And I say that because virtually the entire unredacted report is available in a secure room. And at least to date, to my knowledge, no Democrats have actually viewed this report. So it is all theater. It's all politics. Chairman Nadler, who demanded that the special counsel's investigation into Bill Clinton be maintained in secrecy, now has turned around and he's now demanding quote unquote full transparency. He has received full transparency, but that is not enough.
Well, to your point, Harry, when Chairman Nadler was asked why he has not reviewed that full report without the additional redactions, withholding only the 6E material, he said that he did not think it was fair for him to review that information if the other members of Congress could not review it. Of course, you know, the Department of Justice said, well, that will enable us to have a negotiation, a further negotiation about what other members of Congress you think need to have access to it or what specifically you are looking for. In addition, Harry, he was not interested in engaging in that negotiation. So I think it bolsters your point that this was really about politics for the chairman. Wes, I want to bring you quickly into the conversation before we head into the next break. To me, this looks like all politics in Washington, D.C. And look, I'm generally inclined for more disclosure, more transparency. And I think this report has actually complied with that. I think we have seen more disclosure and more transparency at the end of this special counsel's report than I anticipated or we would have seen under previous administrations. To me, this just looks like politics. What do you think?
Yeah, I think in some ways they're refusing to take yes for an answer. Mueller reports to one person, that is the Attorney General, Bill Barr. Bill Barr was not obligated to release any of the report. It was not a report to the American people. It was not a report to Congress. It was a report to the Attorney General. He willingly, released most of the report, and so no good deed goes unpunished, as they say. The histrionics, though, the antics that are going on here are designed strictly for the purposes of political theater. Many of the people on this committee, they are attorneys. They know the law. They know better. This is done for their own political dramatic effect. And frankly, it's why so many American people are disenchanted with our government, with the bureaucracy, and it's a waste of time and taxpayers' money.
Yeah, I think if it was about access to information, Chairman Nadler would have continued his negotiations with the Department of Justice. He would have viewed the version of the report that was available to him, and he would have continued that process. But he wanted the political theater. Look, I think the assertion of executive privilege probably closes the door on this. There will be a lot more noise, but I think essentially it's the end of the negotiation. Folks, after this broadcast, an exciting report about Asiya Bibi. I know it's a case that many of you have been following, and we will get to your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back right after this.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up, at aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. I'm going to be joined in just a moment by Shahryar Gill, who is a senior litigation counsel here at the ACLJ. He oversees our work in Pakistan. I know you've heard from him on this broadcast before. But before I go to him with this exciting update, I want to remind you that our phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. Got a lot to talk about today, but I didn't want the show to get by without talking about some exciting reports that are being issued by a number of outlets. CNN, Fox News, New York Times, and others are reporting that Asiya Bibi, who is the Christian mother from Pakistan that so many of you know about, who was arrested in 2009 and convicted in 2010 of blasphemy under Pakistan's penal code and spent many years on death row. Reports are that she has arrived safely in Canada and has been granted asylum there. We are working to confirm the details, but certainly that is very, very good news. Been confirmed by a number of leaders around the world, and I'll give you some of their responses in a minute. But I wanted to bring in Shahryar Gill, again, senior litigation counsel with the ACLJ, who's been working front and center on this case for us. I know so many of you have been involved in this. We had more than 800 signatures on behalf of Asiya Bibi's release as we advocated for her both domestically and across the world at the United Nations. Shahryar, for those who haven't heard about this case, would you just give us a brief recap of what Asiya was convicted of, what the facts were leading up to her case, and why she was on death row in the first place?
Yes, Than. She was convicted of blasphemy in Pakistan because she was working in a farm and she offered water to a couple of her co-workers who were Muslim. And they said that they could not drink water from that cup because she had drank water and made it unclean. So, and they asked her to convert to Islam because that's they could drink water if she was a Muslim. So she denied, she refused their request, and she said that she basically reaffirmed her faith in Jesus. And after about 5 days, she was convicted of blasphemy.
As shocking as that might seem, folks, this is a circumstance that we see around the world. And before we get into some of the more details of the case, so Wes, I just wanted to bring you into the conversation because I know this is something that you've done a lot of work on. As we do, as we fight persecution around the world, these kind of trumped up charges over either an innocuous act or, in this case, actually an act of kindness, an act of generosity, get contorted in a court of law that doesn't really have any rights for the defendant. And someone of a Christian faith, usually, or at least a minority of faith, is accused and convicted of blasphemy really without any weight of evidence. We see it on a regular basis.
Yeah, as Christians in a place like the United States of America, we don't realize how precious the faith is and how people suffer for their faith around the world because we have, you know, religious freedom that we enjoy and protections under the law, and we live in a nation that is pretty kind and generous in their response to people, even people that are different than them. What a lot of people don't realize, Than, is that Christian persecution is on the rise. In a recent report, they said that Christians are now the most persecuted religious group in the world. It's the first time since the days of the Roman Empire that that has been the case. Christians, we don't realize it because we don't live in some of these countries, but they are routinely killed and persecuted across the globe for the simple reason that they are Christian. And it's really unfortunate, and I think it's really heartbreaking, that most of the Christians who are persecuted and killed, they're persecuted in Muslim-majority countries like Pakistan.
It's really the biggest reason that we have numerous offices around the world, some of which we talk about, some of which we don't, that are really dedicated to advocating for those who would not have robust legal defense if it weren't for work like ours, work for others that we partner with on the ground. Shahryar, I wondered if you could talk about some of the specific advocacy we did for Asiya Bibi, as well as some of the specific work that the Pakistan office of the European Center for Law and Justice, our affiliate there, does. You oversee that work. You've been on this broadcast many times explaining it, but for someone who doesn't know about our work there, maybe give a brief description of what that office does and how that office led our advocacy for Asiya in this case.
Yes, Than, we had this office for the last 9 years in Pakistan, in Lahore, Pakistan, and We have a team of attorneys there and other staff that work on cases of religious persecution, similar to cases of Asia Bibi. We have represented clients in blasphemy cases. We have represented clients in rape cases, in murder cases, in police torture, a wide range of cases. And most of the cases, as you can see, involve criminal instances or criminal charges or criminal activities against Christians. So we have represented people in a wide range of cases. And currently, we have about at least six to eight cases that are ongoing that involve murder, that involve disputes between Christians and Muslims, a rape of a five-year-old Christian girl, and a blasphemy case. So we've been working on these cases. We have had victories in Pakistan, and sometimes, unfortunately, there are times when justice is difficult to obtain.
I think it just gives you a good scope of the work of the ACLJ, partnered with our European affiliate, the ECLJ. You know, folks, it's important to have legal advocates on the ground for these cases. And then we need to partner with all of you. Again, I mentioned 800,000 of you joined our petition advocating for Sia Bibi's release. We also delivered an emergency letter to the ambassador of the United States in 2016. We filed a submission at the UN Human Rights Council. All of it meant to shine a light on this case and make sure that Pakistan couldn't execute this Christian mother for committing no crime under the cover of darkness. Today, with these multiple media outlets reporting that Sia has safely left Pakistan, that she has now arrived in Canada, been reunited with her daughters. This is what the British Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, tweeted. He said, "Fantastic news that Asia Bibi appears to have left Pakistan safely." He added that he was about to meet with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to talk about persecution of Christians around the world. And Shahryar, just a closing word here as we're closing this segment of the broadcast. This case was about Asia, but we highlight these cases to put a face on a case, but she's really representative of so many around the world who are afflicted by persecution and who the ACLJ and our affiliates exist to stand up for. That's what your office in Pakistan and the others around the world are dedicated to.
That's absolutely correct, Than. There are multiple people who are on death row or serving life sentences in Pakistan under the blasphemy law. And that's just one of the cases, or one of the kind of cases that are that Christians are involved in. As I mentioned, there are multiple cases of persecution involving starting from just minor disputes among Muslims and Christians, but also church bombings, church attacks, killing Christians. So it's. Asia Bibi's case is just representative of a wide range of cases that we're involved in.
Folks, it's fantastic news today. I wanted to bring you that update. I know so many of you have cared about Asia's case. We rejoice with her and her family. We thank each of you for standing with us, for giving us an opportunity to be a voice for her. We certainly wish her the best in Canada. We thank Canada for granting her asylum. Folks, when we get back from the break, I want to talk about the situation that's evolving in the Middle East around Iranians' threats of Israel and the United States. I mean, I think it was fairly predictable, but the United States, fortunately, under this administration, is standing up and leading with strength. We'll get into that after the break. Again, if you want to be a part of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are going to talk about an issue that is breaking in Iran and in the Middle East region in just a moment, but I want to quickly go to a caller who called in about the topic we covered in the last segment, the release of Asiya Bibi. Let's go to Janet calling on line four from Illinois. Janet, welcome to the show. You are on the air.
Well, thank you. I love your program. I love what you guys are doing. Thank you very much. I am so glad that they finally released her. This has been going on for way, way too long. And it's good that this has finally taken the course that it has. And I had one other comment about the situation with President Trump. I think the Democrats are being very childish about this. They wanted the Democratic president, didn't get it, so now they're doing everything they can to make the man unhappy.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, look, a couple of comments. First of all, on Asiya Bibi, yes, these are the days that we work so long and hard for, and these are long cases. This situation started in 2009. We've been engaged for a number of years on this. Really, it takes persistence. It takes legal advocacy around the world. It takes the involvement of our members to get a day like this. And when the day comes, we rejoice. And then we remind all of you that there are countless others around the world who are not yet free, and we need to use our voice to advocate for them. On the political issue, I'll go to Andy on this. Andy, I agree with Janet mainly for this reason. If it were about accessing more information, first of all, I think the versions of the report that we already have out would satisfy those who are seeking access to information. But secondly, if it were about access to information, I would think that Chairman Nadler would want to continue negotiations when it is clear that the White House had made repeated concessions about additional members available to view additional information. It is clear to me, Andy, that this was about political prosecuting. I don't think Chairman Nadler wanted a resolution to this. I think he wanted a day like today where he could hold a contempt vote for political purposes.
Well, that's exactly right. This is just sour grapes on the part of the Democrats. They got 99.9% of the report. They're not satisfied with it, because the contents of it were not there. They can read the report. There were 12 of them were given access to the report. The chairman was given access. The attorney general gave the report when he didn't even have to. He didn't have to do that at all. He could have kept it as an internal executive branch document. He had the absolute right to do that. In retrospect, in my opinion, he should have kept it and told the legislative branch of government, I am asserting separation of powers, and guess what? You don't get my papers that we have come up with. But he didn't do that. So what the Democrats are now doing, because they're soured on this fact that the report didn't come out to be what they wanted it to be, they wanted collusion, they wanted obstruction, their special counsel Mueller didn't find it, so now they're saying we're going to hold the Attorney General of the United States in contempt. Good luck and big deal. What's going to happen then? It's going to go to the United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, who is a Republican appointee, and he's going to prosecute Bill Barr? Guess what? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's a dead-end street, and frankly, I think it halts the progress on the negotiations that they had. I mean, the Attorney General had been very compliant. He appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He was willing to appear before the House Judiciary Committee if they could agree on terms of both his testimony and the release of this document. He'd gone back and forth with several offers for, you know, versions of the report that would be made available, or members of Congress, additional members of Congress that needed access to it. Those members of Congress did not avail themselves of the version that the Attorney General gave to them. So they weren't after more information. They simply wanted to take a vote today to hold the Attorney General in contempt. I think the Attorney General had no choice but to request that the White House assert this executive privilege. That privilege has been asserted. I think that is essentially the end of the story, except for the political noise that will ensue. And I think the statement from the press secretary of the White House says as much. Folks, we haven't gotten to your calls yet. We're going to after the break. 1-800-684-3110. And we are going to get to this news out of Iran, that Iran is finally technically withdrawing or walking away from the Iran deal, one with which they haven't been complying from the very beginning, one which they never intended to comply with. Now they are admitting to as much. They are walking away unless the other powers of the world come to a new deal with them in the next 60 days. Folks, the Iran deal is dead. We'll be back to talk about it after this.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I'm going to go right to the phones in this segment of the broadcast. I've been promising it for a while now, and then we are going to get into this situation involving the now dead Iran deal. We've known it was dead or dying for a long time. Now I think it's safe to say that it's officially dead. There's not even a party on the other side of the agreement that believes it's alive, so we'll get to that in just a moment. But I want to start with Nancy calling from California on line two. Nancy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that Jerry Nadler was talking this morning, and I've heard him say it a few times. I think he's trying to sneak something in there. So he was talking about not just the report, but he said supporting documents. So I believe that he's trying to get this in there because his little agenda is to get everything turned over to him. I think he wants to turn documents over to state attorneys, knowing that Trump could not be pardoned by state charges. And it's kind of like the Mueller thing where he went in and did all of this work and he charged people for other junk that had nothing to do with collusion.
Yeah, Nancy, there's no doubt that underlying evidence is one of the things that Chairman Nadler has said that he is seeking, that he wants from the Department of Justice, never mind that he's not entitled to any of that. And in fact, the presumption of innocence and the protection of the innocent is a fundamental core value of our way of law. But I can think of no one better to respond to that than Andy Economo, a former U.S. attorney, state prosecutor. Andy, what do you make of that portion of this request from Chairman Nadler, that he's after not only the full unredacted report, but all of the underlying evidence that went into writing the report? What do you make of that request?
Well, I think that the caller is absolutely correct. The aim of the Democrats through Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is to get to the source materials that Mueller compiled in putting together this report. Millions of documents, all the 302s, which is the form number for the FBI reports, all the information, the raw data, so that they can then sift through and make their own determination. Well, guess what? The legislative branch of government is not the executive branch of government. It doesn't make prosecutorial decisions, nor is it the judicial branch of government. It doesn't determine guilt or innocence, except in one instance, and that is in impeachment proceedings. Otherwise, it's a fishing expedition that Nadler and the Democrats are on because it's sour grapes. They lost the election. The unthinkable occurred in 2016. Hillary Clinton, the queen, the crown princess, did not become the president of the United States. We're going to fight this election until the end of time. For 2 years, the president's administration, President Trump, has been marred by the Mueller report and the obfuscation that the Democrats have put on this. Now they didn't get the result that they wanted, and they're crying that they want all the documentation that supported this instrument that was finally put forth by Mueller a few weeks ago. They're not entitled to it. They shouldn't get it. The election of 2016 is over. We're now looking to 2020.
And I think the point that Andy's making was underscored by Congressman Doug Collins at today's hearing where they were voting on contempt for the Attorney General. Let's go ahead and play that sound. It's Byte 15, Congressman Doug Collins.
In an odd move for anyone demanding access to information, the chairman and the other elected Democrats given access have declined to view that report.
Again, it goes back to what we've been talking about. The members of Congress who actually had access to the report with less redactions, they were not availing themselves of that, including the chairman. Chairman Nadler said that he would not view it until every member of Congress could view it. Of course, that would just be a guarantee for a leak that every innocent person who was in there had grand jury information in the report. It would be available to the public. So I don't buy that. But folks, the good news is I think this is the end of the story, except for the noise. We had a commenter on Facebook that was saying that she thought this was all about the 2020 election. It was Mary on Facebook. Democrats will continue to sideshow through the 2020 election. I do think that there will be noise on this all the way through the 2020 election. I think they have shown their hand on that. This is what they want to talk about leading up to the 2020 election. I don't think it's particularly good strategy, but the news for today, I believe that this is the end of the substantive phase of this negotiation. Chairman Nadler did not want information. The White House was forced to assert executive privilege, and I think substantively it is now over. There will be noise all the way through the 2020 election, but that will be purely political. It will not be substantive. I'm going to quickly move to some breaking news out of Iran. We haven't had a chance to get to this the last couple of days, and I would be interested in your commenting on this. You can call the show at 1-800-684-3110. But this news out of Iran, probably the headline that you saw was that Iran is now withdrawing or backing away from commitments under the Iran deal. And you might be thinking, well, I thought President Trump withdrew from the Iran deal a year ago, and he did. And we told you at the time that while Iran would pretend to continue to comply with the deal with the other parties that had made the agreement, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, that they would not be able to for one reason. The leverage that the United States has economically dwarfs that of the rest of the world. And I want to talk with Wes in just a minute about why this was never a real deal in the first place. There was nothing to comply with. But I want to go to Harry on this economic point first. Harry, this is in your wheelhouse. But when I look at these headlines that Iran is now deciding that it is not going to even comply with the figment of a deal that remains with the other countries, what I see is that the economic sanctions that the United States has put back in place, has allowed to expire, and the waiver period that it was granting companies, now that those have expired, I think Iran is hurting. I think their economy is hurting, and I think countries around the world are choosing a relationship with the United States over continuing to do business with Iran. Am I on the right track there?
Absolutely. So I think Iran is essentially trying to blackmail the European countries into providing additional financial incentives to so-called remain in the Iran nuclear deal, even though there is some evidence that Iran is not in compliance with the deal. So if you look, for instance, at the International Monetary Fund's report on the economic growth of Iran, it has continued to crater. So in the first quarter of the 2019 period, as the first part of the United States sanctions were reimposed in May of 2018 and then fully imposed in November 2018, the economy grew by less than 2%. However, unemployment in Iran approaches 20%. The inflation rate in Iran is sky high, interest rates are rising, and the exchange rate for the Iranian currency are falling. And so as the United States has fully imposed its sanctions, because it gave waivers with respect to the purchase of Iranian oil for a while, this will put additional economic pressure on Iran. So Iran is responding in two ways. First, by issuing additional threats, military threats, against the United States. And secondarily, by threatening to expand its nuclear program. And so what it is trying to do is trying to force Europe, Russia, perhaps China, to provide financial assistance to Iran so it can weather the storm. And it's also important to add to this particular calculus the notion that the Iranian people are not happy. Every so often, there are sporadic protests and demonstrations, and it's very difficult, of course, to get accurate news reports on all of this. But we know that the Iranian people are hurting, they're unemployed, and in some cases, they are in a desperate search for food and shelter. And so the Iranian government is lashing out. The United States should remain firm, and we should put our European allies on notice that we will not relent with respect to Iranian sanctions going forward, that Iran will have to live with, in essence, the bad that it has created, no matter what.
I think it's clear that Iran is feeling the economic squeeze. I wanted to quickly go to Wes, because Wes, there's a component of this that involves Israel. Israel shared with the United States some intelligence that Iran was threatening U.S. interests in the region, and the United States responded by sending an aircraft carrier to the region. But clearly, this is why we have a relationship with allies in the region like Israel, to protect our interest when Iran threatens them.
Yeah, and all of these events remind us that Iran is as committed to Hamas and Hezbollah's charter as ever, in which they call for the destruction of Israel and their, quote, struggle against the Jewish people, unquote. And so I think the world needs to be aware of how serious this is. The JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, was a farce from the beginning. It had a 10-year sunset clause, and also all military installations were exempt from inspections for any nuclear activity in Iran. It's a good thing that we pulled out of it. I think the other nations are beginning to wise up too. To the Trump administration's credit, they're really tightening the noose around Iran, trying to get them to join the community of nations, to stop their malign behavior, to stop attacking people through their proxies. Iran thus far is not responding. They are a real threat, not just to the region, but to the world.
Folks, we'll take your calls on any topic, 1-800-684-3110 in the last segment of the broadcast. Any of the three we've covered or any that might be on your mind. Again, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to go right to your phone calls. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, I do still have a couple of lines open. 1-800-684-3110. Taking your phone calls on any of the topics we've covered today or any that might be on your mind, maybe the 2020 elections. But let's start with Mary calling from Maryland, my home state, on line three. Mary, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You are on the air.
My question is, I don't understand why the president had to exert executive privilege regarding the redactions when, if it's against the law, why couldn't they just say you've requested something that we cannot respond to because it's illegal?
It's a good question, Mary, and I'll go to Andy to talk about this a little bit more. But essentially what happened was there was a negotiation taking place between the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, and the White House over what redactions would be made available to what additional group of members of Congress. The most recent offer, at least reportedly, that had been made by the White House was that about a dozen members of Congress, including Chairman Nadler, would be given access to an unredacted version, but that the grand jury information, so information that was currently being held by a grand jury and they were still deliberating, that would still be withheld. But Andy, what really brought this to a head was Chairman Nadler decided that he was going to hold the Attorney General in contempt of Congress today in committee. They were going to take that vote today. That really put an end to the negotiation. So it ended the illusion, Andy, that the chairman was really after additional information.
The chairman is not after additional information. Please understand that. That is not the case. That is hogwash. What this is political theater. He has the right, if he wanted to, he was given, I should say, the opportunity to look at information in this report. I've read the report. It's two volumes. It's over 400 pages. He could have looked at information that was not privileged, that was not confidential, that was not secret. He chose not to do so because he'd rather take a political stand and hold the Attorney General of the United States in contempt and then be able to broadcast all over the country, Bill Barr, Attorney General, held in contempt by the House Judiciary Committee and ultimately by the full House of Representatives. Much more theater and makes a much more impression on people who don't understand than trying to negotiate with the Attorney General in good faith, which they never, ever tried to do. Please understand, folks, this is political theater and drama. It has no substance to it whatsoever. The Attorney General did exactly what he was supposed to do in withholding the report portions that were not subject to public scrutiny. And what the president had to do, because the Democrats in the House wouldn't abide by the law, is say, okay, I exert executive privilege, which is the right of the executive branch of government to keep secret those deliberations and documents and information which are obtained within the purview of the executive department. So they forced the president into this move. He did the correct thing. Remember, when Clinton was president, Nadler didn't want the report that Ken Starr did on that scandal public, did he? He didn't want that, but now he wants this public.
Well, and the chairman even admitted that he hasn't read the version that was most recently offered to him by the Attorney General. He said he wasn't going to read it as some sort of, I don't know, good gesture to the other members of Congress that didn't meet the threshold. Of course, we know that Congress leaks worse than maybe any institution other than the FBI. Maybe the FBI is worse. I'm not quite sure. But certainly, if every member of Congress had access to the sensitive information, it would be leaked in a matter of minutes. I really do encourage you folks. I want you to go look for the infographic that was available that put all of the report onto one page and showed you how minimal these redactions were. I think it was the New York Times that offered, but it was very telling. That is the version that is available to every member of the public, and members of Congress have access to a version of even fewer redactions. I believe Will is saying it was the Wall Street Journal that put that infographic out. Of course it was. The Wall Street Journal would put out a great infographic like that, but check it out. Very minimal redactions, even in the version that was available to the public. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee wanted this political opportunity to hold a contempt vote today. He was not actually looking for an unredacted version of this report. Folks, as we close out the broadcast today, I just wanted to spend the last couple of minutes talking about the situation in Iran. And I wanted to bring Harry into the conversation because Harry, Wes mentioned in the last segment of the broadcast how the original Iran deal was not a real deal to begin with. He mentioned how Iran got to inspect their own facilities and how they got advanced notice when international inspectors were going to notice. And even then, military facilities were off limits. He mentioned that it sunsetted after 10 years. Harry, this deal was always set up for Iran to be able to achieve a nuclear weapon either by complying with the deal or by not complying with the deal. We always thought they never would. I think today's indication that they are now walking away from the agreement that they have with the other countries is an indication that they never intended to imply from the very beginning. This was not a real deal from day one.
I think that's precisely correct. And I think one of the things to keep in mind is President Obama took all of America's negotiating leverage off the table. Instead, the Obama administration essentially announced to the Iranians that the United States would remain an open door, and all that the Iranians had to do was to push against it, and that we would continue to kowtow to their demands so that we could create the illusion that the Iran nuclear deal was actually a substantive, enforceable agreement, when there was little substance and very little enforceability attached to the agreement. So under the agreement, Iran could continue with its nuclear program. And we had to give them 60 days notice, as I understand it, before sending in inspectors. This is nonsense on stilts. In essence, the United States government essentially gave the Iranians a gold-plated deal, and I mean that literally, because we sent them cash as part of the negotiations, and we essentially demanded little in exchange. And so we should have known that Iran would A, not comply with the deal, and B, the deal would be unenforceable. President Trump unexpectedly, at least in the eyes of the Obama administration, won the election, and Iran now realizes that there is a new sheriff in town, and consequently, they are going back to the Iranians and essentially asking for more money to bail out their cratering economy. We should try to ensure that they get nothing.
And Wes, just quickly as we close out the broadcast, today the importance, this week, the importance of a strong relationship with Israel was on full display. You see the Iranian threat rising, Israel shares information with the United States, and we are able to mobilize into action.
Yeah, they are our chief ally, the only democracy in the region. Thank God for them. And they face a constant threat from Iran and from their proxies. One other thing quickly, Thand, I might say, as Iran continues to pursue nuclear weapons, you have to look at the threat also that they are already in violation of UN resolutions about ballistic missile testing. If they get a nuclear weapon, they're already firing ballistic missiles. In a few years, we could have a threat from Iran, much like the threat from North Korea now, only in a much more volatile part of the world.
No question about it. The good news is the United States is once again leading from a position of strength. Folks, I would close the broadcast today just rejoicing with the CBB's family. She appears to be safely in Canada. We are grateful for that. We are grateful to the more than 800,000 of you who stood with us advocating for her freedom. We will talk to you tomorrow.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.